It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 485. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for future show topics at miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. I have two voicemails for tonight. We'll get to in a few minutes. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Mike Tech Show. Also, there's a Mike Tech Show page on Facebook. That's Mike Nation Net. Check out the wiki, and that's at mtswiki.com. There you'll find links to all of the past shows, the show notes, the audio. Jam-packed show for tonight. Going to go over three Christmas gift items that you might want to consider for the geek in your life. Two of them are very inexpensive, and one's, it's not that bad. It's not that pricey, but very high quality, especially for the music lover in your life. And then I have two voicemails and a stack of email to catch up on after missing last week. So I'm glad to be back behind the microphone and looking forward to regular schedule now for the rest of the month, because the way Christmas falls on a Wednesday, it's great, so it doesn't interfere with Thursday nights. So no schedule changes. Look for a show hopefully next week for Tech Vets, and then our New Year's Eve show for Tech Vets. Carrie and I, we're going to try to do New Year's Eve show again. Now, he might not hang on for the whole time. I definitely will for the post show. Instant House Call is the best service for remote support. They now support Windows 8, Windows 8.1, and you can easily use Windows 8 to remote control and support other systems, or you can remote in and take control and do remote support on Windows 8. Supports all operating systems. Used it just the other night for one of my clients who had an Internet Explorer problem. And I talked about this a couple weeks ago on Tech Vets. Internet Explorer just refused to work. You would launch it and no websites would come up. None. It was very frustrating because Firefox worked. The system was cleaned and working great. Internet Explorer, we couldn't get to anything. We couldn't even get to Google. So I tried tweaking.com's repair. I've tried all the repairs. Well, one of the links for tonight from the Windows Club, repair Internet Explorer with the Fix IE utility. Used Instant House Call to connect. It took about 20 seconds to run and repair Internet Explorer. What this utility does is it goes through and it re-registers and these 85 DLLs that Internet Explorer requires to run. Instantly, with no reboot, I was able to launch Internet Explorer and it worked perfectly. Very, very cool. With Instant House Call, it made it very easy for me to remote control in and take care of it and fix this problem. You can start providing remote support right now, and you can give it a try free for 15 days. Just click on the link on the left-hand side of miketechshow.com. See the big Instant House Call link? Click on that. And then when you sign up, use the promo code MikeTechShow, and you're going to get free 15 days to give it a try. Let's talk about some tech gift ideas. There is this little speaker. It's rubber. And it has a adhesive that you can just stick on any glass or surface, a suction cup at the bottom. I picked this up for $15 on Black Friday. It's called the Jive Speaker, and that's J-I-V-E. I'm going to have my Amazon link to it. I think it's like $25 now that you can purchase this. It is Bluetooth. If you have any device, and right now everybody's got a phone or a smartphone or a tablet, or even if your Windows computer doesn't have Bluetooth, you know, it's very easy. Those devices are very inexpensive to buy. Just USB to get, you know, Bluetooth 4.0, and you can then link up to many devices, whether it be a keyboard, a mouse. But this Bluetooth speaker, for inexpensive, it is very nice. What a great little stocking stuffer. So I wanted to mention that. Now, if you want incredible sound, I mean the best sound you could possibly get using Bluetooth, we're talking the Bose SoundLink Mini. This thing weighs a lot. It weighs a few pounds. It is very heavy, very sturdy, but small. It gives a booming sound that you got to hear it to believe it. Go into a Best Buy and try to, or any Bose store, and give a listen to this. You're going to love it. It's $200. And one of the things that the companies, Apple and Bose, they don't discount. Bose makes incredible products, but they do not discount. This is Bluetooth, and you can, there's a port that you can plug a cable, so you can cable direct, but the sound is so incredible. I can't do it justice. You have to hear this, and when you hear it, you're sold. And for $200 for the music lover in your life, or maybe just treat yourself to an incredible speaker for Bluetooth, I married up my iMac to it. I married up my MacBook Pro when I was traveling this past weekend, my Samsung tablet that I've been playing with to learn Android, my iPhone, and my iPad. One click of the Bluetooth button, and it's paired instantly with the device that you want to pair it with. And the sound's just awesome. A great gift idea, and link will be in the show notes. Now, I want to thank Mike, who is Taz Cool in the chat. He sent me the Pogo plug. This is under $30, and it's a device that allows you to share files outside your house. You plug and play, 60 seconds, you have this running. You have a power cable, and then you have an Ethernet cable that you plug into your switch or to your router. You then go online to the mypogoplug.com website, tell it you want to register a device and find a device. It will find it on your network. You sign up for the free account. There's 4 USB ports on this device. You can hang any hard drive or USB stick and share the files. Right now, for mine, what I've done is I just have a USB stick with my favorite utilities I use for cleaning. So let's say I'm trapped at a client and maybe I don't have my USB stick with me, or I don't have access that I want. I can go right to my site, sign in. You go to my Pogo Plug, you know, the Pogo Plug website, sign in with your email address and password, and you can access these files. They're easy to drag and drop. You can manage these files very, very easily. I can't wait to hang my 3 terabyte drive on it, and I'm then going to be able to really store some files. There's an Apple iPhone app. There's an Android app. I can put my whole music library on a drive, have it shared out, and play the music from an app on my smartphone, and I have access to my whole library. Well, wait, have it paired up with these speakers, and I have my entire library with beautiful sound from the speakers wherever I'm at, as long as I have an internet connection. See how all this is related? You know I love music, and you know I want to come up with things and ways for you to be able to play back and listen with quality. For me, When it comes to audio, you know all about the quality. And I strive for the best. And I would never steer you wrong. These devices, I've done a lot of research before I purchased them. And they're great, great gift ideas. My Amazon link for each of these devices will be in the show notes for tonight's show. And while you're there and while you're shopping and doing your Christmas shopping, use my link. It's amazon.micnation.net. Your price stays the same, but a little piece comes back, a little commission to support the Mike Tech Show, keeps the show moving, keeps the lights on, keeps the website hosted and everything going. You know I put it back into the show. That's why we have now stereo sound, high def video for the recordings, for the live show. So you know I put this back into the show. And thank you for all your support. And you know, if you're stuck on a Christmas gift, get an Amazon gift card. What a great idea. And you know what? That's a gift that can not only it help support the show twice. I'll get a commission for you buying the card. And then what you do is share my link. And the person you give the card to, they can use my link and purchase it. And I'll get a double commission. So that's awesome. Thank you for supporting the show. So let's get to the voicemails. Here is the first one. And it's about that Windows boot problem.
Hey there, Mike. This is John from Michigan calling in regards to a user that had a problem with Windows and Windows Home Server booting on a PC he was trying to do a reinstallation on. This is in show number 483. I have not listened to 484 yet, so I'm not sure if you covered this. But I would guess the problem has to do with AHCI in his BIOS settings and Windows not having the correct AHCI driver. At first guess, I've run into this before, dependent on certain motherboards. What he could try to do and try to simplify that so he does not get the blue screen of death on reboot is to simply change the BIOS setting from AHCI to either IDE or compatibility, or from RAID /AHCI to IDE compatibility mode, and try his Windows installation again. Normally, this isn't a common occurrence in Windows 7 because it has some basic AHCI drivers, but I have seen this happen before, and perhaps this will solve his problem since both his Linux installs with Mint and Ubuntu were working just fine. Hey, Mike, thanks for all you do. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Holidays to everyone at the Mike Tech Show, and I hope this helps out.
Thank you. We did cover that a little bit, but I think you're dead on with the solution for that Windows boot problem. Here's a great voicemail from Brian in the UK. You got to listen to this about Windows 8.1.
Hi, Mike. This is Brian from the UK. I have to try to concur with you. Right. Number one, I agree. I've got two machines, both 64-bit, both 8 gigs of RAM. One is a Lenovo laptop. One is a purpose-built, hand-built tower. The tower doesn't work. The times, the speed up, the boot times are terrible. Apps. I mean, you. What did you? I'm not sure if you said it was 30 seconds. Mine's like 2.5 minutes. And I was like at 17 seconds. This is with 8.1, just to be clear. Now, I decided that what I was going to do was I'll go back to 8 on the tower because the laptop is absolutely fine. It's been running great. And I think part of the reason is, well, let me take a step back. I had one small problem with the laptop. When I first installed it, it said it didn't have the drivers for the mouse. I think, okay, that's fine. But for the average person, I think that would have been a problem. But for me, not, you know, you could find a driver. So let's put that to one side. So I go back to the tower. And then when I load it, it's not only slower, I've got no sound. None whatsoever. I replug the headphones. I go into properties. I see which is it that's it's directed towards, whether it's the speakers, nothing. Okay. I reload the drivers, nothing. Cannot solve the problem. I mean, literally cannot solve it. I spent 2 weeks and I'm like, I've had enough with this. I put it back to 8. And I thought, okay, that was like 8 weeks ago. And I said to myself, well, you know what? Maybe you were a bit hasty. So I then decide yesterday, which was the 7th, I said to myself, I will make the effort to go again and have a try. Well, not only did it do the same thing again, but I couldn't mount the drive. And the drive, I had two drives. One was 250 and one was 500. I couldn't mount the 250 drive because I never keep data on my machines. I always have like a terabyte drive that has the backup. So I mount the 250 drive, can't see it. It cannot be seen. And I am so, now I'm going out of my mind. Okay. So I get Puppy Linux. I put that on. It can see the drive. Okay, fine. I get Nopix. I put that on. It can see the drive. The backups that I had, because I do use Shadow Copy, but I also use Drive XML and Clonezilla. And I thought to myself, I'm safe here. I've got plenty of backups. Do you know, when I came to restore any of those, not one of them worked. They said that the drive limit had changed, and as a consequence, it could not be restored. There are some intrinsic problems with 8.1 on certain machines. And I want to be balanced. On the laptop, it was just the trackpad, and it was just a driver issue. But on the handmade tower, I'm literally here now looking at the screen, and I'm reinstalling Windows 7 and having to upgrade and do a full restore. So I don't know, maybe that concurs with your frustrations, but those are certainly mine. Anyway, Mike, all I can say to you, keep up the good work. I will use your link over Christmas at Amazon. I know you needed the plug. And I'll certainly speak to you again. It's Brian from the UK. You take care. Bye-bye.
Brian, that was awesome. Sharing the pain of Windows 8.1. Not everybody's going to experience this, but certainly I experienced a slowdown when I upgraded to Windows 8.1 on my Lenovo laptop. Others have been experiencing different problems. A lot is driver support, I know. And when you have a new system or you have a new update, it's the drivers. But how different should the drivers be just going from 8 to 8.1? It was like a whole different operating system going from 8 to 8.1. Brian, you and I are in agreement there. I do not recommend anybody upgrading to 8.1. If you're at Windows 8, be happy. Stay the course. Wait until they do something beyond it, maybe 8.2 or some kind of other hotfix or patch maybe, but stay the course with 8. Don't go to 8.1. And right now, if you are a Windows 7 user and you're happy, stay with Windows 7. There's no need to upgrade unless you're getting a system with a touchscreen interface. And you're going to have a touchscreen. But I'll tell you, I'm not there with the touchscreen. I don't want to have the fingerprints on my system. Okay, maybe a tablet, an Ultrabook that's a true laptop that then turns into a tablet. And then you can use your fingers on it. Okay, that makes sense. Other than that, I don't see it. I don't get it. I'm not there. Microsoft, I think, made a... Well, no, I don't think they made a mistake. They should have had a Windows Touch version and a Windows Pro version. That should have been it. You can have the Metro interface in both of them, but then you bring it up when you want it, not in your face and not giving you the control. That's just part of the problem. Look at all the compatibility issues. Great voicemails. Thank you very much for taking the time to leave a voicemail or send me a recorded message. Everybody, I really appreciate that. Let's get to some email and get caught up here. This is from Brent, and it's about RAID. Hey, Mike, listener of your show for about a year. Love listening to you on both the Mike Tech Show and Tech Vets. You brought up servers on your last show and listed your own minimum requirements. When you came to storage, you said at least 3 terabytes of usable space via 4 1-terabytes in a RAID 5 array. My understanding is that a lot of IT professionals in the Spiceworks community have dismissed RAID 5 in favor of RAID 1 or RAID 10. Let me be very clear. RAID 1 is mirroring. And only if you're in a 2-drive scenario would I ever recommend mirroring your drives. I would disagree. I got to participate in those forums and mix it up a little bit, because I would certainly want to share my opinions on RAID 5. Simply because RAID 5 has a long rebuild. Not if you have the proper controllers. What is everybody buying? And it is more likely to fail during the rebuild. No, not if you have a reliable controller. A good controller from HP or the PERC controller from Dell with the proper battery backup and memory on it? No, you're not going to have problems. I come from a server and RAID world where the rebuild times aren't that bad. If you're buying cheap, inexpensive equipment, yeah, the rebuilds are going to be bad. With RAID 1 or RAID 10, rebuilding is simply taking the data from one drive to another with little performance penalty on the rebuild. Personally, I would suggest that the minimum requirement for a server would be 2 to 3 terabytes in a RAID 1, and everything else, what you said on that last show. Brent, I disagree with you 100%. And I wanted to share this because he's not correct. And I challenge the Spiceworks community. They're wrong. And I'm right. I don't get like this all the time. But I come from a corporate background of over 30 years of experience working not only with my hands in the servers and building these, but managing them from an enterprise level, working directly with my techs and engineers on the configuration and the rollout of hundreds of servers. And I've done this for years. When I give you an opinion on something like this, this is, it's not just something I've read or something that, oh, maybe I have lived it. So hear me, when you want to have a proper fault-tolerant server in a production corporate environment, it's RAID 5, and that's what you want. And if you can afford it, you go beyond that, where you have a hot swap drive that would automatically be put into the RAID 5, and it would rebuild. Now that I got that off my chest, see, I vent it like Brian did, see? And you know what? I challenge anybody, if you disagree with this, leave me a voicemail, record a message and send it, or put it in an email and send it to me, and I absolutely will share it with the community, with everybody here, the Mike Tech Show family. This is from Terry, and this is a follow-up on the Windows 8.1 start time. Previously, you talked about how the startup times in Windows 8.1 are slower than Windows 8. I had the same experience with my Asus Ultrabook. Today, I disabled SkyDrive on startup, and that seems to shave off 8 seconds from the startup. I did the same, and I actually saved a few seconds on startup. When you have these drives like Google Drive and Dropbox, you may not want to have them start up automatically, and that will definitely cut down on start time. So I agree with Terry here. I have ordered a new desktop with Windows 8. It will have a fourth generation Intel i7-4770 processor and 16 gigs of RAM. I will be interested to see how fast that starts after it is running Windows 8.1, and I have removed the bloatware. I sent you other emails about the Windows 8 Certificate of Authenticity and IM Mail, because remember, I remember when he signed it, Terry, I said, boy, I don't know if this is male or female, so thanks. By the way, used your Amazon link to order the Western Digital 1 terabyte external drive. Thanks for all you do, Terry. Thank you, Terry, very much for not only using my Amazon link, but following up with your previous email and sharing your 8.1 experiences. Thank you. This is from Mike, Taz Cools. It's not in the chat tonight. Originally, I wanted this to be anonymous, but seeing as others may have this problem and to admit that I don't have all the answers, me and both business partner and friend who is an IT tech at a hospital have not been able to figure this out. All of us are stumped. I built the parents a new computer and cannot get emails to port over to the new system. I have tried FABS, Auto Backup for Tech, but obviously doing something wrong. They have Office 2003, but the email is Windows Mail, not Outlook. And I would have thought any help would be appreciated. I'm not familiar with Vista Mail. So he needs to go from Vista Mail to Outlook, to a PST. I don't know how Vista Mail is stored, but I'm wondering, more importantly, who is the email provider? And is there a way that we can maybe use an intermediate step by sending the mail to another carrier and then bringing it down via IMAP or POP into Outlook? You might not be able to do a direct conversion. I've never tried it, but if anybody has some tips on going from Vista Mail to Outlook, how can we do that in an easy fashion? I want to spur the thinking to think out of the box and look for maybe an intermediate conversion, another step in getting the mail. I've had issues going from Outlook Express to Outlook, and I've moved clients of older systems to Thunderbird, which is a great option. This way it's free, it's a nice email client, and we don't have to worry about it. So I'll convert someone to Thunderbird. And that's easy, going from like an Outlook Express to Thunderbird. Vista Mail, I'm not sure. This is from Kevin. I'm a PC tech who's CompTIA A+ certified, CompTIA Healthcare IT Technician certified. I want to become CompTIA Server Plus certified. I never dealt with a server nor any of its OS before. What good ebooks do you recommend for my training to become Server Plus certified? And what other recommendations do you have for me? I will really appreciate your input. Thanks so much for your advice, Kevin. Here's my thinking on this, and I've mentioned this in the past. You have to have hands-on experience with administrating and managing the server operating system. You need to get on Microsoft's site, download the 120-day eval. There's always eval options for Server 2008, Server 2012. Take advantage of that. Download it. Get it installed on some inexpensive hardware. And you need to set up and play with a domain. Once you get the workgroup server and you're familiar with the interface, now you need to promote that server to a domain controller. That's where life gets complicated. And that's where you take advantage of the internet searching for the operating system like Windows Server 2008 or Windows Server 2012. And just Google it and search and look for different online resources. There's a ton of resources that are available. Start playing. That's the best way to learn. Teach yourself, and you got to practice, and you got to play with it, and you got to screw things up and blow it up and start all over. And that's how you learn. Play with it. And that's how you're going to get some experience. And then you'll do great on the test. This is from Joe. Power savings on LAN and wireless adapter. Thanks for the tip, Mike. I am in the IT business and I've never had that connection issue except at my home with my wife's laptop. Every day she comes down to her computer in the morning, she can't connect to the internet. I had been trying to troubleshoot that for months. I updated the drivers for the wireless adapter and everything else you can think of. The only way I could get her connected was to restart the router. I even ordered a new external adapter to insert it into her laptop last week in case the problem happened again. Sure enough, she couldn't connect the next morning. I was going to try the new adapter when I remembered the tip you gave on the podcast. So instead of trying out the new adapter, I went into the settings of the wireless built into the laptop, and sure enough, the wireless power savings were checked. I disabled that feature, and we have been good to go every morning from there on out. Thanks. We always learn something new. I have been in the business for years and would think that issue would have come up at least once before. Maybe it did, and I used some workaround to fix it somehow. This was a much easier fix. As an aside, I just built a new computer and installed Windows 8.1 on it about a week ago. I would get the blue screen of death periodically because of the AMD graphics adapter drivers. Also, there were several errors in the event viewer related to all sorts of issues. If I went into the reliability monitor, there would be several more issues listed. Go to run and type reliability and it will show up. I also had Outlook 2013 and it was atrocious to look at and it behaved badly. When I imported my PST from Outlook 2007, the RSS feeds didn't work. The calendar items were scrambled and the way it looked was a nightmare. I'm the type of guy that likes new technology. I like change. And this was too much. I installed Windows 7 in Office 2010, and it all worked like it should. No errors in the event viewer. No blue screens. I am going to wait on Windows 8.1 until it's stable, reliable, and consistent. And as far as Office 2013, I just don't know. And I did use the 32-bit version. Thanks for you and your shows. That's why I'm here, to share the pain and suffering that I see from clients and myself. And I've come to the conclusion that I think the highest version of Office that I'm going to achieve, unless they turn it around and do something, it's Office 2010. When I got my new computer here, my main system, that's got all this RAM and the fast hard drive and super graphics card, what version of Office is my main Office version? It's Office 2010, 32-bit running on the 64-bit operating system. Even Microsoft recommends to not install the 64-bit version of their Office, and that's because the add-ins will not work. I think we're at a consistent standard here for everybody, which is Windows 7 Pro 64-bit, Office 2010, and that's my standard. Now, I have two laptops running Windows 8.1. I put myself through that pains just to learn and to get experience and to share all of those experiences. So I want to take the hit before my client does or before my listeners. I will try to stay on the bleeding edge of everything just to be able to say this. I know a lot of people thought I was crazy when I came down on Windows 8.1. I came down on Office 2013. I come down on Office 365. But a lot of you agree, because when you go through it, you're like, oh my gosh, what are they doing? What's Microsoft doing? You know what they're doing? They're putting themselves out of business. If they keep this up, if they stay on this path of self-destruction, they're going to continue to lose market share, revenues. Stock price will go down. I don't get it. Hopefully they're gonna hit a point and turn this around. I think Steve Ballmer, when he leaves, and his replacement, hopefully will start to turn things around and start to make smart decisions for the user base. This is an Outlook 2010 issue. Hey, Mike, finally getting around to sending you an email. Thanks for all the shows. It really makes travel between clients so much easier to be able to listen and educate myself along the way. I have a small issue with Microsoft Outlook 2010 on a Windows 7 professional PC. When you open Outlook and see your list of messages, they come in as unread, bold, and black. When you open and read a message, it turns gray and no longer bold. There is the typical way Outlook has always worked. But on my system, whenever I shut down or even put my system to sleep, when I restart and go back into Outlook 2010, every email shows up as being read, even the ones I have not opened, making it real difficult in tracking what I need to attend to and what I've already taken care of. I've gone through the settings and searched the internet without much help. Any ideas out there to solve this would be greatly appreciated. Thanks for the great show, Mike. And this is DJ from New Hampshire. DJ, I'm looking at your domain name, and I'm not sure who the email provider is. Who's your email provider? And that's what you want to look at. Do you have any other device that could possibly be reading the mail messages, maybe a smartphone, maybe a tablet, and those settings, you're opening the message and it's being read. That's why it's coming down maybe as already being opened. Your email provider, what are the settings on the web for how to handle a message that's being brought down? Are you bringing them down via IMAP, via POP? I know you're looking at Outlook as the culprit here. This is where I want you to think out of the box, and I'm reversing it on you, and I want you to look at your email provider and those settings, and the answer may be there. Let me know. This is from David. And finally, USB 3.1 will feature reversible connectors. He has a link here. I'll put that in the show notes. This is from Brian, and it's covering various topics. Hi, Mike. I'm just catching up on some shows from the last few months and wanted to chime in on some of the topics. Migrating profiles. I've been using ProfWiz for a few years to transfer Windows profiles when changing domains. It works very well. I've always used a tool that is built into Small Business Server 2011. Once your network is set up correctly, you can type http://connect to access the tool from any workstation. It joins the computer to the domain and transfers profiles also. I typically use the Microsoft tool if I'm moving profiles to a new domain. For existing domains to new domains, I use ProfWiz. I'll find the link to that and make sure it's in the show notes. Crashing external hard drives. I've noticed many crashing hard drives, regardless of the manufacturer. I thought because USB 2.0 was only half duplex, unlike an IDE or SATA interface, that may have been the cause. But I don't see any improvements with USB 3.0 in terms of the drives not crashing. USB 3, from what I understood, is full duplex. Here, Windows 8 versus 8.1. I've had nothing but problems with 8.1. Initially, it seems to work, and then a few days later, the computers just bogged down. The only computer I've been satisfied with using 8.1 or RT 8.1 actually is the Surface 2. I had to wipe two of my computers and set them back to 8.0. Windows RT versus the full version. I know that RT is hated by many, but it seems like 5 or 10 years from now, the masses will stop using operating systems that can become easily infected. And Windows RT is the only thing that Microsoft has in terms of security that can compete with iOS, OS X, etc. Thanks for the show, for all the time you put into making it. You make things a lot easier for the rest of us. And this was sent from his Surface tablet. And that is Brian. Brian, thank you very much. This is from Andrew. Server migration. Hey, Mike. In the last couple of episodes, while answering emails, you alluded to a way you can migrate all the settings from an old server to a new one. Well, not well. I think I implied something that I got to clear up. Up until now, I've always reset up the new server, add all the user accounts, modify permissions, remove computers from the old server, then rejoin them to the new, move all the data settings from the old server, user profiles, to the new server, user profile, etc. I wonder, based on what you have spoken about briefly, if there is a way to migrate all settings from the old server to the new. So all I have to do is drop the new server in place and not have to go through the process I mentioned above. If so, can you briefly explain the process, perhaps from a bird's eye view, so I can then research the processes? I have at least two clients with server updates in the next few months, and I would love to learn an easier process, pros and cons. By the way, none of my clients have group policy items to migrate, just standard domain controller setup. Thanks. Andrew, yes, if you have a true domain controller, you can bring on another server in that farm, in that forest. You can have a second domain controller, and all of the accounts, everything will replicate. There is then a process to demote a domain controller. And those five FSMO roles that I've talked about, and I've linked them with Wikipedia on the definition of the FSMO, the FSMO, which is pronounced FSMO. And what you do when you go through those steps, the process is to transfer those roles to that other domain controller, and then you just shut it off. I only do that if there's a lot of accounts. And I'll tell you, the only time I will bring another server in and add it to the domain and let those replications take place is when I agree with the way the first domain controller was set up. Many times when I take over a client, I completely disagree with the previous IT support before me because they've screwed things up so bad that I want to start from scratch with the new domain controller. And you know what? If there's only a handful of accounts, I'll create them from scratch and set the server up the way I want it set up and set it up the right way. If you have a properly configured domain controller that you are inheriting, sure, why not? Add the second domain controller and let those roles, transfer all the roles and go through that process of demoting a domain controller. You have to weigh the pros and cons. There's no magic here. This is how multiple servers work and operate and live together and share info together within a forest. So you want to make sure that, A, how is everything set up? And B, maybe you want to start over. And that's not a bad thing because now you're in total control. There's another wrinkle. Is it small business server? I went through the pain of going through the Microsoft steps of migrating Small Business Server 2003 to Small Business Server 2008. And let me tell you, that was no picnic. And I went through the, quote, Microsoft migration. It was not easy. And I shared that a few years ago, those experiences. I might have been better off starting from scratch. And I've done that with new clients where I've inherited the server from the previous IT support. It was a Small Business Server 2003, and I was going to Small Business Server 2011. You know what I did? I started from scratch. It was easier. I exported all their mail to PST files locally and then set up a new domain. It was easier. Then imported their mail back into the server for exchange. Life was a lot easier. So there's lots of things to consider. Is it Small Business Server? Is it not? What other applications are there? Are there any databases? Are we talking SQL? There's lots of factors that would go in. There's no blanket answer here on how to easily migrate to another server. I've never seen two migrations be identical. Each one had their own pros and cons as to why I decided a certain methodology on the upgrade and the conversion. There's no magic answer here, no single answer, sorry. You have to look at each case by case and then make a determination. I want to thank everybody for downloading and staying subscribed and listening to the show. I really appreciate your support. That's it for tonight's show. Remember to use my Amazon link for all your purchases, amazon.mikenation.net. Please check out the sponsors and the affiliates. And our affiliates is Malwarebytes Pro, Fabs Auto Backup for Tech. Links will be in the show notes. And, of course, we thank our sponsor, Instant House Call. And you could just click on the link at miketechshow.com on the left-hand side. And remember to sign up for your free 15-day trial using the promo code MikeTechShow. That's it. I'll see everybody next week. Same time, same channel. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Man, you got to hear a whole show. Is that all? I gotta put the other stuff together. I know. Yeah, I know. Let me wrap this and then.